You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Connor. Coming up each year, America has heat waves, cold snaps, tornadoes, snowstorms, hurricanes, and floods. And 2018 was no exception. But our guest meteorologist says some weather events of the past year were just plain weird. We'll talk about the year in weather coming up.
First, if you've ever had to deal with finances in a relationship, you probably know that even having a conversation about money can be difficult.
And it's not just the big things like splitting rent or talking about how much credit card debt you have. Even the small things can be tough, like figuring out how often one partner pays for dinner, or if you should just split the bill every time instead.
Bola Shakunbi is a certified financial education instructor and the founder and CEO of Clever Girl Finance, an online platform for financial education geared towards women. Bola, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Rob.
Bola, before we get into couples and relationships, what got you started on personal finance and financial literacy, especially with women in mind?
It really stems from my own story. So I started out saving money, and at the time I had just graduated from college, and I couldn't find any resources that I could relate to as a woman. All the finance books I was reading and the blogs I was reading were things that were started by men. And I was like, why not start something to empower other women like me who want to achieve financial success? So that was the beginning of my journey.
Now let's get into how couples deal with money. I think one thing that's really easy to do is to not talk about money and finances. Why is it important for couples to open up the lines of communication?
Oh, that's so important, because when you get into a relationship, you are now on the same team. It's essentially a partnership, and you want to make sure that your goals are aligned. You want to make sure that you're laying all your cards on the table and you know what each person is thinking, especially as you're working to pay off debt, save money, and also pursue your long-term financial goals.
How can a couple make the transition from separate to shared finances smoothly? Is it best to do it all at once, or is it good to go in stages?
So this is a question I get asked pretty often, and, you know, it really depends on the couple, and it really depends when you're getting, you know, into the relationship. You know, for younger couples, when they don't really have a lot of financial obligations, it's easier to merge your finances. But for people who are getting into relationships when they already have their own separate financial obligations, it might be a little bit more complicated. So a few things you can do, like I said, number one is you want to be able to lay all your cards on the table. It's all about creating open lines of communication. How much are you earning? You want to share that with your partner. How much debt do you have? You want to put that on the table as well. And you also want to tell them, what do you want to accomplish for yourself? How do you imagine your life 5 years, 10 years from now? Be able to share your goals with that person. And then once you laid all your cards on the table, you want to then start talking about, how do you create a plan together? So essentially, who's going to be paying for what, right? Who's going to pay the rent? Who's going to pay the light bill? How are you going to split the cost of groceries? You also want to talk about, how do you plan to save money for the future, and how do you plan to pay off debt? What percentage of your income will get designated to these, you know, different avenues, depending on how much debt you guys have or what your saving goals are? And if you are in a serious relationship where you're pursuing marriage, then you want to sit down and decide if you guys are going to have a prenup or no prenup, and talk about that financial aspect as well.
We're talking to Bola Shakunbi. She's CEO and founder of Clever Girl Finance. We're talking about money in the context of a relationship, how to resolve some of those difficult issues that can really be a big problem if you don't deal with them. Bola, I think in a lot of couples over the years, the money side of things might fall to one partner and not the other. And maybe it's the person who's better at it. I don't know. But what is, and even if people are okay with one or the other being more specialized in dealing with the issues, what's the bare minimum that the other person needs to know about the financial situation?
I think it's important to know everything. I mean, even if you're not contributing, let's say we have a stay-at-home dad or a stay-at-home mom, or, you know, depending on the situation, one person's out of work, it's important to know what's happening with the finances. Is one person struggling to pay bills? Is one person falling behind on meeting the savings goals? You know, two heads are better than one, so it's easy to have a conversation, especially if you guys are on the same page. You know, not being on the same page is a different conversation. But if you guys are on the same page, it's important to it's basically full disclosure. You want to know what's going on. And one thing I like to tell people, especially couples in relationships, serious relationships, is that when it comes to money, it's not a battle. It's not a whole production. It's, you know, it's something that you want to talk about often in conversation. So it just becomes part of, like, you know, your day-to-day, oh, I paid this light bill, or you know, how are we going to plan for 2019? You want it to be part of your natural conversation, you know, periodically, and not a huge massive production once every year, because once it becomes this production, it can get overwhelming, and then it might start to lead to conflict in that relationship because you guys are not talking about it often enough.
Yeah, you wrote a blog post, I think it was last summer, where you say, you know, don't approach this as a fight, as a battle. And one way to do that is to, I guess, schedule those conversations, you know, before that conflict might arise.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So it could be, you know, if you are the one who wants to have the money conversation or initiate the conversation, it could be bringing up over dinner or sending a text message saying, you know, hey, I'd love to talk about money when you talk about this particular bill when you get home, or, you know, in a nice and kind voice, like, you know how you relate with your partner. And also, it's important to keep in mind that you don't have to talk about all of your finances, your entire financial situation in one sitting. You can divvy it up into different conversations. So this week you talk about investing. Next week you talk about paying off your debt. The following week you talk about budgeting. So it's all about pacing yourself and approaching it as a marathon, not a sprint.
And you talked earlier about getting on the same page. And people might come into a relationship with very different ideas about money, the role of money, planning about money, maybe even ideas that they haven't consciously thought about. How do you start to get on that same page?
Getting on the same page is so important. And, you know, it's important to know your significant other's money type. What kind of person are they when it comes to money? Are they a saver? Are they a splurger? Are you a saver or a splurger? And once you're able to identify that, then it makes planning your finances together easier. And it's also important to keep in mind that there is no wrong way to manage your finances in your relationship, as long as you guys get on the same page, because there are a lot of philosophies out there as to how couples should manage their finances. You must have joint accounts. You should not do this. You should not do that. That does not apply to you. You guys need to sit down together as a couple and decide what's going to work best for us. Is a joint account going to work best for us? Are separate accounts going to work best for us? Like, how are we going to manage it so that we don't drive each other crazy about this whole, you know, financial planning? And you also want to be willing to compromise. So, for instance, in my relationship with my husband really likes electronics and things like that, and they cost a good amount of money. And I like shoes. So we came to an agreement very early on in our marriage that if we're going to be spending money over a certain amount, that we would pick up the phone or send each other a text message to talk about it before we made the transaction. That way we're on the same page and there's no surprises when the statement comes at the end of the month, or I don't have to hide my shopping bags, my trunk of my car. So it's all about coming to a compromise and understanding each other's money types.
Yeah, that point illustrates something you wrote in that blog post I mentioned. Honesty is something you want to see people do. And I could see situations where maybe a partner doesn't want to tell the other person about an expenditure, not, you know, because of nefarious purposes, but maybe they're a little ashamed that they spent that much money or had that much debt or something like that. What kind of damage can that do?
Oh, that can do, you know, a ton of damage. I've talked to, you know, ladies who their relationships have gone south because they did not disclose the fact that they were in so much debt to their significant other. And as you probably know, money is number one reason or the top reason up there why marriages disintegrate. And so it's important to have the conversation. And if you're with that person that really cares about you, that really, you know, is concerned about your well-being, even if they're upset in that moment when you tell them, hey, I spent this amount or I have this much debt, they will come around. And if you're able to communicate properly the fact that you want to adjust, you know, what has happened, you want to make change around what has happened, you guys will be able to come to a resolution to move forward from there. And so it's not always, the conversation around money is not always an easy one, but if you approach it the right way and you're honest from the start, or as soon as you can be honest about it, everybody involved will hopefully get over their anger or disappointment, and then you guys can focus on creating a plan.
Bola Shakunbi is with us from Clever Girl Finance. We're talking about ironing out money and financial issues within relationships.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What struggles have you had with finances in your own relationships? Have you found anything that works really well for you and a partner? What kind of things do you like to talk about up front when you get into a relationship? What stuff do you think is okay to keep to yourself? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Connor. We're picking up our conversation with Bola Shakunbi. She's with Clever Girl Finance, and we're talking about how to deal with money issues in a relationship.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What money issues have you dealt with in your relationship or past relationships? What are some of the things you think are hardest to talk to your partner about when it comes to money? And what kind of solutions have you come up with? What worked for you? Do you have questions for Bola about dealing with money issues in a relationship? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll go to your calls now. Nick is with us in Green Bay. Nick, what did you want to bring up?
Oh, no. When my wife and I first started dating, we were really poor. We didn't have any money. And so money was like really hot topic. Well, now it's even getting worse. I mean, I've got a good union job. She's got a good job. But I still don't know where the money goes. And I noticed that, like I'm 47 years old, but I still play PlayStation. So, like, last night I bought a PlayStation game. And, of course, the sales fee disappeared. But we just don't know how to get onto a budget. That's the only thing we fight about. And it's a super hot topic. I mean, oh my gosh, we fight all the time about finances. Nick, I just don't know how to get on a budget. I really don't know how to do it.
Nick, thanks a lot for the call. Perfect question, Bola. So how can Nick and his wife, A, get on track with tracking their money, maybe setting up a budget, and do so in a friendly way?
Great question. So the first thing you guys want to do is schedule some time, maybe once a month or every 2 weeks, that you put on your calendar that is going to be your money conversation time. And during this time, you guys want to talk about the things you want to buy, the expenses that you have, and basically get on the same page. Again, it's all about keeping your lines of communication open so that you don't get to the point where that PlayStation game has been purchased and it becomes a fight. Instead, you're talking about the fact that you want to buy a PlayStation game and this is what it's going to cost, and then you guys can plan it. The other thing you want to do is you definitely want to get onto a budget. And it's important that when you think about budgeting, you want to make it as easy as possible for both of you to plan out your finances. So there's a couple of things you can do. You can sit down with a spreadsheet and write out all of your expenses, write out your income, and plan that way using a spreadsheet. You guys can decide to do it on pen and paper, or you guys can leverage budgeting apps that are free. There are a ton of them. A really popular one is Mint, and you can find that at mint.com, and start to use that to plan out your finances. Keep in mind that when it comes to budgeting, it's like learning to ride a bike or learning how to swim. You have to practice in order to do better with it each month. And so if you find that you're slipping up or you're falling behind, then the next month is another opportunity for you to work at it again. One example of something that my husband and I do to kind of minimize money fights is, you know, we both know based on our budget what our obligations are when it comes to paying off bills, when it comes to our long-term future plans. And then once we've contributed to that budget, we have extra money that gets designated into our own individual accounts, and that's the money that we can use to do the things that we want to do without having to explain to the other person. So I don't have to tell my husband, oh, I bought a pack of gum, for example.
Thanks a lot for that call, Nick. Good luck to you and your wife, and I hope that helps. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. And on that theme of budgeting, Bola, I've heard the case made that don't just budget and try to cut spending and feel like you're denying yourself something. Try to figure out whether you're a couple or an individual. Set a goal. What are you saving for? Whether that's, you know, retirement savings, or we want to buy a new couch next year or something like that. How important is that kind of financial goal setting in motivating us to make that budget?
that's super important. You have to make accommodations for the things that make you happy. So a lot of people think about budgeting as this restrictive thing that only shows them how to pay off debt and pay bills, and that's actually, like, you know, not the right way to think about it. When you think about your budget, you want to think about the bills you're going to pay and the debt you have to pay off and the savings you have to make, but your budget is also going to allow you to plan your finances for the things that you love. So a line item on your budget, in addition to saving for retirement or saving to pay, you know, or paying your monthly bills, could be saving for a family vacation. And you have a line item where every month you are saving a specific amount of money for your family vacation or to buy something nice, like a new TV. But it's all about giving your dollars a job to do, and your budget is basically the plan that allows you to give each dollar you earn a job to do. So they're all designated to different places, including the things that will make you happy, so it doesn't feel like punishment.
Talking to Bola Shakunbi, certified financial education instructor, founder and CEO of Clever Girl Finance. She's helping navigate money and financial issues for couples at any stage in a relationship. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You know, we've talked a lot about the money side, and you've touched on this next question a little, but how can we take some of the emotion out of the money issues?
Oh, my God, that is such a tricky one, because money is tied to emotion. When you have a lot of it, you feel super happy. When you don't have enough of it, you can get anxious and angry and depressed. But it's important to be objective about your finances and remember that your money is a tool. It's a tool to help you achieve your goals. And so instead of focusing on the actual money, focus on what it is that you want to accomplish with your finances in your life, you know, the goals that money can help you attain, and break it down from that perspective. So if one of your goals is to take your whole family on a trip to, you know, an exotic location in 2 years from now, then that's the thing you want to keep in mind as you're planning out your budget, as you're thinking about ways you can cut down your expenses, and also thinking about ways that you can increase your income. And so one area where people struggle with budgeting is that they just focus on cutting back the expenses. But there's only so much of your expenses that you can cut back without feeling that things are really, really tight. So another area that you and your significant other can start to think about is, what ways can we increase our income so that we can kind of get some relief on, you know, the money stress we may be feeling. So it could be getting a part-time job. One of you gets an additional part-time job to your full-time job. It could be that you both start applying to better paying jobs. It could be that you guys think about starting a side hustle, something that, you know, you guys or one of you is really good at, that you get compliments on, that you can start using to generate additional income. Or it could be looking around the house that you live in and figuring out, okay, what things do we have that we can get rid of, that we can sell on eBay or Facebook Marketplace, or take to a consignment store to bring in some extra income to support, you know, relieving the stress on our budget.
Now, we've got a generation of younger adults now that is, in a lot of ways, still recovering from the Great Recession 8 years ago. Their starting incomes were maybe lower than previous generations, maybe higher student loan debt if they went to college. Do you have any advice for younger adult couples still trying to dig out from that situation?
So the student loan debt crisis is a big one, but it's important to, again, remain objective. It can be overwhelming to think about the fact that you have a ton of student loan debt to pay off, or that you're not earning a ton of money. But it's, you know, as you navigate through your finances, you want to make sure that specifically when it comes to your student loan debt, that you know what your student loan debt is. A lot of times people sign up for student loans 4 or 5 years ago, and they don't remember what they all are. Know what they are. Know what your interest rates are. If you are struggling to pay your student loan debt, make sure you're communicating with your loan servicer. And when it comes to your income, it's all about getting creative and thinking about how do you cut back your expenses, but how can you increase your income? And getting lean and mean with your budget, you know, a lot of times, especially as young people, we want to accommodate a lot of luxury. So going out with our friends, traveling, going shopping, buying new clothes, getting our hair done, things like that, buying electronics. But when you take an assessment of your budget, or if you are not yet budgeting, pull your bank statements, pull your credit card statements for the last 3 months, get a highlighter, and start to, you know, see what are the areas where you found yourself spending a lot of money that wasn't necessarily a need. You know, it was more of a want that you could do without. And maybe you don't completely eliminate it from your life, but instead you make a conscious effort that you're going to cut the spending on that category in half. And then the last thing I would say is, when it comes to, you know, your earnings, it's not about how much you earn. It's about developing the right money habits and building consistency and doing your best with what you have, because it doesn't matter how much you earn. If you're not good with money, you can make seven figures, you can make six figures a year, and you can still have nothing because you never actually learned how to manage your finances. So start learning how to save, how to budget, start practicing, start reading financial books. You know, YouTube is a great resource to watch videos on personal finance. You can get books on Amazon from your library and start reading about personal finance and start to educate yourself and implement what you're learning in your own personal life with your personal finances.
And as we start to wrap up, Bola, you mentioned, I think it was Mint.com, a free app to help us budget. Any other apps that can help make it easy to tackle what can look like a really big issue when it comes to couples and money?
Yeah, so Mint is a great app. There is another app called You Need a Budget. That's a great app that you can leverage to manage your finances. When it comes to things like checking your credit scores, a lot of banking apps actually offer free credit score checking within them. And then your banking apps also, for instance, Bank of America within the app, they give you the option to review your spending and create a budget there, so you can leverage that as well.
We'll leave it there for now, Bola. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
That was Bola Shakunbi. She's a certified financial education instructor and the founder and CEO of Clever Girl Finance. She was with us to talk about tips and strategies for dealing with money in relationships.
Coming up, we'll look back at the top weather events to hit Wisconsin and beyond in 2018. I'm Darrell Conner.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to The Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Conner. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on the morning show, it's this week's edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Outgoing Tourism Secretary Stephanie Klett joins the show with some great suggestions for winter travel in Wisconsin. And you can share your favorites. That's tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network.
First, the United States typically sees all kinds of weather in a given year. The heat waves, cold snaps, rain, snow, tornadoes, hurricanes, wildfires, the list goes on.
By that standard, 2018 was pretty normal, but our guest says there were quite a few weather events that made last year downright strange. The coldest April in more than two decades, followed by the hottest May in 120 years, a Hawaiian island wiped out by a hurricane, and a strong firenado in California, just to name a few.
Here in Wisconsin, we had big-time rain and major flooding this summer, plus a record-breaking snowstorm in April.
Jonathan Erdman is a Milwaukee-based senior digital meteorologist with weather.com and a contributor to the Weather Channel podcast. John, thanks so much for joining us. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Darrell and Rob. It's a pleasure being here.
You know, over the course of a year, there's always bound to be some unusual weather somewhere. Can you quantify how odd 2018 was, or was it about average in terms of weirdness?
Well, you know, this is my favorite column to write every year for weather.com, because you just look back over a year and you're just awestruck at everything that's happened. And in most years, there's a big storm. There's one big national story, say Hurricane Katrina, or, you know, some big weather event, a big tornado outbreak that captures the attention of the country. But in this case, I think this is the first year I've worked here where I've ever seen that it's really been arguably a couple of hurricanes, but it's also been wildfires that really captured the attention of the country. And like I said, I can't remember a single year that's been like that.
Well, let's talk about Wisconsin first and what it experienced. The state climatology office said that Madison had its second wettest year on record with more than 50 inches of precipitation, about 2 inches shy of the mark set way back in 1881. That included both rain and melted frozen precipitation. And Milwaukee had its third wettest. La Crosse had its fifth wettest. Why in the world did that happen? What happened?
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to put that into a little bit of context. So again,
absolutely.
As you mentioned, it was the second wettest year in Madison, and the wettest year was in 1881. So no one alive has seen a year wetter than what we've just seen in Madison. And no one alive. Similarly, Milwaukee, the only other 2 years that were wetter than 2018 in Milwaukee were in 1876 and 1877. So just think about that for a second.
Wow.
In Madison's case, they picked up about 16 more inches than average. So that's basically like getting 18 months worth of precipitation in 1 year. So it's off the charts, and it's a combination of events, particularly during the summer, that really boosted rainfall totals, especially in the southern half of the state.
Yeah, and what was really strange, you talked about what happened in southern Wisconsin, but the climatology office also said that northern Wisconsin was pretty dry. So how did that happen?
It was an interesting split. You know, if you look at a map of the precipitation over Wisconsin during the year, there was a heavy swath of precipitation basically over the southern half of the state. If you just draw it, you know, southern half, northern half. Then there was a bit of a dry swath just to the north of that, and then there was another heavy swath right near Duluth Superior and up toward Ashland and Hurley. So it was just this, it was almost like a dry sandwich with wet slices of bread, if you will, if you look at that map. So you know, the far northern part of the state that was mainly contributed by an impressively heavy rain event that occurred right around Father's Day weekend. And in the south, of course, it was all about mid to late August and those repeated rounds of heavy rain.
Now, can you give us a sense under normal Wisconsin weather and normal circumstances of how much precipitation that Wisconsin tends to get in an average year?
Yeah, so in Madison, if we, again, we melt down all the snow and we add up all the rain, and we typically get about 34 to 35 inches of precipitation a year. So, you know, that's pretty typical for the upper Midwest. You know, obviously, if you go in the southeast United States, that those precipitation totals are, you know, 50, sometimes 60 inches a year. So that's pretty typical in an average year, say, in Madison. But again, in Milwaukee, we're talking 45 inches. In Madison, we're talking 50 inches, which are more like average rainfall totals you may get in, say, Atlanta, Georgia, or in some parts of the south. So if you consider all the... You consider all the vegetation they have in parts of the deep south, that's because they typically get that much precipitation in a year. And this year, that was in the case in much of the state of Wisconsin.
Jonathan Erdman is a Milwaukee-based senior digital meteorologist with weather.com. He's also a contributor to the Weather Channel podcast, and we're talking about 2018, the year in weather, both in Wisconsin and around the country. Sticking to Wisconsin for just a few minutes, we were also hit with a huge snowstorm in the middle of April. In 36 hours, Iola got nearly 26 inches. Green Bay had 24. That was the city's second largest snowstorm on record. Rylander had 18. Can you take us back to early spring when this all happened?
You know, I'm still getting over April here. April bruised me. You know, I lived in Atlanta for about 16 years, and so my blood got thinner living down there and less tolerant of the cold. Then I came up here, and I'm still getting over April, but... That was really one of the most impressive blizzards that we've seen in Wisconsin in several years. And as you mentioned, it happened in the middle of April. It happened, you know, roughly 2 weeks into the Major League Baseball season. We were done with winter by that time. but that particular storm lasted over 3 days. And, yeah, as you mentioned, there were a couple locations in northeast Wisconsin, in Oconto County, in Door County, Shawano counties, that picked up over 30 inches of snow. These are the types of storms that we are used to seeing, say, in the Northeast, in New England, with those classic, you might have heard of the storms called nor'easters.
Yes.
Crawl right up the East Coast that produce feet of snow. Not so much here in Wisconsin. You know, we get a 6 to 12 inch storm. That's kind of a big deal for us. But, you know, You know, Green Bay, again, had its second heaviest snowstorm record. They picked up 24 inches of snow. The only storm that produced more snow in Green Bay was in 1888 in March.
Wow.
So, you know, they more than doubled their previous heaviest April snowstorm. So, you know, we had a roof collapse at a Green Bay motel during the storm, and we had 35 to 50 mile per hour winds that were driving 10 to 16 foot waves on Lake Michigan in April. So, yeah, that was one of the most remarkable winter storms that I've seen here in Wisconsin in several years.
You know, the artist Prince once had a song called Sometimes It Snows in April. And while it does, this really took it to the extreme, because it wasn't until July 9th when the final snow pile melted in Appleton, most of it coming from that mid-April storm. So when we talk about weird weather in 2018, that has to be among the strangest ever, correct?
Oh, yeah, that ranked high up on my list, and not because I'm a resident and, you know, born and raised in Wisconsin, but that came high up on the list, not only because it was the coldest April on record for the state of Wisconsin going back to 1895. That's crazy enough. But then fast forward to May, and across the country, May was the hottest May on record for the country. So we had this amazing flip between a cold April over, you know, a good two dozen states in the central and eastern U.S. Then we flipped the switch to May, and we had one of the hottest Mays on record. And one of the scientists that we work with, a climatologist based in Alaska named Brian Bretschneider, does some tremendous work out there. He pointed out that it's one of the biggest flips between record cold to record warm in back-to-back months that he's seen anywhere in the globe in 100 years. Occurred from April in the Midwest to May in the U.S. with a record warm April. So it was just really bizarre, you know, to have that dramatic of a flip between 2 months.
We're talking about the year in weather across Wisconsin and the U.S. with Jonathan Erdman. He's a Milwaukee-based senior digital meteorologist with weather.com and a contributor to the Weather Channel podcast.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think was the weather story of the year in 2018? Were you affected by the flooding this summer, the snow they were talking about? What about any of the other weather events to hit the country? And you have a question for a guest about the weather last year and maybe what's coming up in 2019. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We'll continue the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Connor. We're talking about the top weather stories of 2018, both here in Wisconsin and outside the state. Jonathan Erdman is our guest. He's a Milwaukee-based senior digital meteorologist with weather.com and a contributor to the Weather Channel podcast.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your biggest weather story of 2018? Warming temperatures, heavy rain, wildfires, the flooding. Did you experience that directly yourself? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR.
And let's go to the phones. Let's go to Nate in Mazomani. Good afternoon, Nate. Welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I have a specific question for the meteorologist. I've lived in Mazomani for 47 years. We're flood-prone because we're on the Black Earth Creek. However, we've had two major floods, and the first one was September 1st of 2001. And then this year, we had 10 inches of rain in less than 24 hours. This year, it was the 24th of August, and we had 15 inches of rain in less than 24 hours. My question to you is this. Is there certain kinds of climatic patterns that set up at that time of the year? I know what happened. The moist air came off the Gulf. The cold air came from the north. They collided right over us. Is there some kind of climatic condition that tends to have that collision occur at that time of year in our area?
Thank you for the call, Nate.
Well, first, Nathan, my heart goes out to you and everybody in Mesomania. I still remember seeing all the aerial coverage from local media during the event, and that stuff just breaks my heart. So I hope everybody's doing okay, and continued prayers for the recovery. Specifically, what we typically see in the latter part of summer is we have these the atmosphere will set up where it has these stalled frontal boundaries, and they're pretty weak fronts, so they're not as strong a fronts as we typically will see, say, in winter. So they're just really weak shifts in the wind that sometimes set up over an area. And in the summer, the steering winds and the jet stream aren't very strong, so things just don't move fast in the atmosphere in the latter part of summer. And so, unfortunately, what can happen in late summer is you have as much moisture as you'll get. You know, it's the dog days of summer. It's hot. It's humid. And because the steering currents are pretty weak in the atmosphere, anytime you get these little jet stream disturbances that move over that stationary front, you can get these clusters of thunderstorms that'll just sit and stall and just rain themselves over several hours. And before you know it, you have, as you said, 10, maybe even 15 inches of rain. You know, those can happen in early summer. They can happen in late spring. They can happen, you know, even in maybe later September, October. But that is kind of a sweet spot in August and early September when the jet stream is so weak it just can't move weather systems along. And in this case, we just had this cluster of rain that just sat there, and unfortunately for Western Dane County, it was the disaster that it was.
Let's go to Connie in New Lisbon. Good afternoon, Connie. Welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for taking my call.
Did you have a question for John?
Well, not so much a question. Well, a question maybe, but a comment is, this year we were really plagued, it seemed, by just so many frequent rain showers that for the farmers it was really difficult to get into the fields and bale hay, and then the flooding was just the nail in the coffin. And I know myself and several other farmers and rescues, there's a massive hay shortage. Most of us don't have enough hay right now to get through the winter. We can't find hay, and unless you're able to financially hire somebody to go somewhere where there might be hay that's palatable for the animals and get it, it's just not available. And I'm wondering, you know, last summer we saw frequent rain showers, and then this summer, if this is something, maybe a changing weather pattern that's just set in.
Well, Connie, it's predicting summer precipitation and summer patterns is always pretty difficult. I mean, predicting any kind of seasonal patterns is always difficult. But I should have mentioned earlier, one other factor that really contributed to the flooding is that we really had a wet late winter, you know, not just the big snowstorm in April, but we also had a heavy rain event in late February that melted snow, and there was a good 2-3 inches of rain, at least here in southern Wisconsin. And, you know, that just completely soaked the ground, and then there just wasn't, you know, it contributed. It was kind of a one of many steps that contributed to all the flooding that we would see later in the spring and in the summer. So we don't really know too much about summer patterns and predicting them for this summer. What I would say is there is a developing El Nino that is taking shape now, and in general in the winter we tend to get less snow. Tends to be a little bit warmer, maybe a little bit less precipitation during El Nino winters and spring. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that at least maybe we can have a drier winter and a drier spring that can at least not set the table for the kind of flooding that we saw by the time we got into the summer.
John, I know we spent a lot of time talking about precipitation because there was so much of it, but 2018 was also a bad year for wildfires as well. In fact, they made several appearances in your top 10 list of strange weather events. First, can you tell us about the factors that led to these huge wildfires, these devastating conditions?
Sure. Well, first of all, California has very distinct wet and dry seasons. So they get the large majority of their rain from, say, late October, maybe early November through, say, April. And then they have several months where it just doesn't rain at all, except maybe you get a stray thunderstorm here and there. So what happens is eventually by the late summer and into the early fall months, the vegetation's dried out. You know, it hasn't rained for 3 months. So when you have that scenario set up, and then you have these Santa Ana wind events, these strong winds that blow from the land to the sea in California, and then all of a sudden you have some kind of an ignition, you have some kind of a spark. Maybe it's a thunderstorm in the middle of summer, to be honest. When you have that, all of a sudden, in these Santa Ana wind events, the fire can spread so quickly. What California's been dealing with, they've had several years in a row that have been quite dry, that was interrupted by a very wet year. And what happened with the very wet year is you had all this vegetation that grew on top of all the dead vegetation that had dried out from all those previous dry years. And then that became even more fuel for the fires. So, you know, the problem with California is it doesn't rain 12 months, you know, it doesn't rain 12 months out of the year. It rains 7 to 8 months out of the year. So eventually every fall, you know, folks with CAL FIRE and local authorities get nervous every time there's a strong wind event. And unfortunately, that really came up in spades this year.
And, well, you're talking about California, but it's not right next to it, but close enough to California. An entire Hawaiian island was washed out by a hurricane. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what happened there?
Yeah, this is a bit surreal. So this wasn't one of the hurricanes that obviously got a lot of attention in the media. It obviously wasn't Hurricane Michael that hit Florida or Hurricane Florence that, you know, soaked the Carolinas. This was Hurricane Welaka that was well west of the Hawaiian Islands, which, you know, as I mentioned in the article, had an eventful year as it was. So this was one of the stronger hurricanes that you'll see in the Central Pacific. It passed well west of the main Hawaiian Islands, but it passed close enough to this small island called East Island in the French Frigate Shoals, and all the surge, all the water pushed out on the eastern flank of this just overwashed this tiny island. And, you know, we noticed in satellite imagery after the storm went past, the island wasn't there anymore. It was just completely washed over. So, you know, we see that sometimes on the coast when a hurricane makes landfall, it'll make a cut in a barrier island, say in the Outer Banks, North Carolina, or in the Texas Gulf Coast or Louisiana Gulf Coast. But that's really the first time I've seen, not a big island, but it's the first time I've really seen an island just completely washed over and it's gone.
Wow.
So
we have a little bit under 3 minutes left, so I did not want to let you go without talking about the fact that in late August, we had a line of severe thunderstorms that moved through central and east central Wisconsin, and it spun off around 19 tornadoes. And I know you noted in your piece that 2018 was a strange year for tornadoes, not only in Wisconsin, but across the U.S. How come?
Well, specifically, I mean, this is some of the good news that came out of 2018. Oftentimes we talk about disasters, but this was good news. So in 2018, we had the fewest U.S. tornado deaths on record dating to 1875. Only 10 people died because of tornadoes. And that was largely because we did not have a single, quote, violent tornado. And what I mean by violent is an EF4 or stronger tornado anywhere in the U.S. And that's the first time that it happened in modern records.
Wow.
And those are the big violent tornadoes like Joplin, Missouri, mm-hmm. or the ones that hit Moore in Oklahoma City earlier in the decade. Those are the ones that typically are the deadliest. But we did not see a single one like that anywhere in the U.S. So this was a rare speck of good news that we did not have any tornado like that. We certainly saw tornadoes, but nothing quite that intense. And no real big massive outbreaks like, say, the 2011 outbreak in Alabama, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, anything like that. So this was very good news. And, it wrapped up a pretty active August in Wisconsin. We had that outbreak of 19 tornadoes, including an EF2 tornado near Brownsville and Fond du Lac counties. So that was occurring as the flooding was occurring. So,
Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you spending the time.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Jonathan Erdman is a Milwaukee-based senior digital meteorologist with weather.com and contributor to the Weather Channel podcast. We talked with him about some of the biggest weather events of 2018.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we take a tour of Wisconsin's newest historic places. The places aren't new, the designation is. Check out a big piece of Wisconsin history. Maybe there's something in your community.
We'll check out a big shakeup in the convenience store industry with the rise of Quick Trip.
And on this week's edition of Food Friday, we'll take a look at the roots of Caribbean cooking. Check out this recipe. I'm looking forward to this grilled pineapple upside down rum cake. Oh, yeah.
That's coming up tomorrow on Central Time.
Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. It's the morning show with Dean Collenback in for Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 7:30, reading is good for kids, but sometimes it can be hard to start a reading habit and keep it going. Dean's guests have advice that'll help get kids reading and some book suggestions, too. That's tomorrow at 7:30 on The Morning Show.
Coming up next is the news from NPR and WPR. And then we'll get the details on a study that found contamination in many wells in southwestern Wisconsin. I'm Darrell Conner.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.